Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. At the beginning of 2015, playwright Lee Blessing came to the University of Tulsa to workshop one of his latest plays, The Hourglass Project. We spoke with him while he was here. Now, 10 months later, the University of Tulsa Theater presents a full production of the revised play, which is in its second week of performances, tonight through Sunday. Lee Blessing is a prolific playwright, best known for his 1988 play, A Walk in the Woods, a piece about the emerging understanding and respect two strategic arms negotiators, one American and one Russian, develop for one another. But Blessing has written many plays that have appeared on Tulsa's stages over the years, including Eleemosynary, Cobb, Fortinbras, his adaptation of Hamlet, and Going to St. Ives, to name just a few that come to mind. In this new play, The Hourglass Project, several elderly couples awaken from an experimental procedure that miraculously returns them to their youth. At this secluded estate, they struggle to adapt to their new bodies and lives, ready for a new lifetime of experiences. While it's a comedy, The Hourglass Project reveals a number of ethical issues and asks fundamental questions about America's fascination with youth and our economy's seemingly inexhaustible desire to sell us youthful rejuvenation. The Hourglass Project continues with performances tonight through the weekend with a Sunday matinee at Kendall Hall on the TU campus. Lee Blessing was here for the opening weekend last weekend, and I spoke with him while he was here. Lee Blessing, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
We spoke in January at the beginning of this year when you were workshopping this piece, The Hourglass Project.
Right.
And I think you'd already had one performance day with this play, but you went back to it to sort of, I guess, do a set of revisions for this piece. Well, what led you to go back to this piece as opposed to saying, well, okay, I've launched this play and I'm going to go on to the next one?
Well, it's true. The play was commissioned somewhere else and had its world premiere. But, you know, when you work on a play, the world premiere isn't always the last word in the text. You tend to keep revising, you know, and I've certainly done that with all sorts of plays that might start at one theater. And then as I work on a subsequent production, I'll say, you know, I just figured out a few more answers here. Maybe I should do it a different way. So, and the current text reflects a lot of changes.
Now, when you're working on a piece in the commercial theater, a lot of that process happens in that first production because you're constantly churning out revisions. Is it the same when you're working in a nonprofit or in a university theater as opposed to the commercial world, or is it the same process either way?
You know, for me, the process has generally been similar. Sometimes theaters have specific needs or specific questions or asks that they make, you know, for a play, and sometimes it changes. This play was commissioned by a university, and so or by a college, actually, and so I framed it originally as something that needed to have 20-year-old roles in it, and it still does, so. That automatically made it a play you're probably not going to see at your local resident theater because they don't like original plays with casts that large. But universities do, obviously. They have theater departments and a lot of people whom they want to give roles. So, in the case of this play, I've sort of moved it from one university setting to another, and sometimes – And I kind of set the play up so that it can be produced in a lot of different ways. So, for example, this production is quite different from the staging of in the first production. So, and in subsequent productions, I'm sure will be different in their own way.
You're not a playwright that usually gets involved in the actual production process. So that's sort of always a nice or hopefully a pleasant surprise when you actually see how a director stages your work.
Absolutely. I love this production. I think Susan's done a great job on the show scenically and directorially. You know, but it's a different idea than I originally put into the script. I created a script that really was open enough that you could do it a number of different ways. And she simply selected a particular way. which I think works beautifully for the show.
Mm. Is that something you tend to usually do, is leave those stage directions open for interpretation, or is it it depends on the piece?
It's very different with every play, but I have noticed that a lot of my plays, especially the ones that have been produced the most, can be done different ways, and still respect the script and what the play has to say. So they still make the play work, only they do it in their own way.
We'll talk about this revision process that you've been involved with the University of Tulsa Theater. The play had its world premiere. You did another workshop in January. Mm-hmm. How has the play changed, or in what ways is it different? In what ways is it the same?
Oh, I think, it's gotten richer. I think I've gone into more background. When you have 9 characters and you're treating them all about equally, it's always going to happen that one or two of them tend to get short shrift at the beginning. You don't get to everybody right away. And so part of this has simply been rounding out certain characters and giving them more, giving us a better hook for who they are and what's going on with them. But also, in the middle of writing this play early on, I suddenly realized I needed to restructure it a good deal and bring an important event that had been lurking around the scene 7 all the way up to scene 4. And so I restructured the play a lot.
Mm-hmm. Talk about that idea of when you have 9 characters, getting a sense of who all 9 characters are as opposed to cameos and concentrating on 3 or 4. I mean, well, that would be the normal route, wouldn't it? I mean,
oh, sure. But, it's interesting because I've written 5 full-length, 2-character plays. And what I find fascinating about that is often I will write a 2-character play and one of the characters will dominate. For some reason, I get that character better than the other one, or I focus on that character. And so, we'll do readings and people say, this guy needs to be punched up a little, this other character. So if that happens in a 2-character play, you can imagine, the juggling act that a 9-character play is in terms of making sure everybody's arc is significant, that it works, that it's consistent. That they go from A to Z, in the space of the show. This is why they say playwriting is revision. That's just the way it works.
Now, in this version of the Hourglass Project, I assume similar to the first version, the play opens with 8 people who had been older Americans, some with Alzheimer's, some alcoholic, all sorts of problems of living that accumulated life, mm-hmm. in a wheelchair, for example. They awaken with Dana, who is the mm-hmm. daughter of the founders of this idea that you can reverse the aging process. And lo and behold, this mm-hmm. process has been successful. And mm-hmm. all of these 8 older Americans are now back to 20 years old.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that the person that you have interrelating with these 8 is also 20 years old. Was that just a conceit of the need to have college-aged actors playing the role? Is there something good about having that role also mm-hmm. be a 20-year-old?
Well, when the play was originally commissioned, it was an open commission, but they hoped I would find some roles for people in that age range because that's an undergraduate college. So I challenged myself to find something where they were all 20 years old, and everyone in this every character in this play is 20 years old, but some of them actually it's 6 of people that have come back, and 6 of them used to be 80 years old. Now they're 20. So the play sets a little bit in the future, but not as far as you might think. And they've come upon an experimental process that actually allows them to do this with people, which immediately creates all sorts of moral conundrums. For example, can you live forever this way? Can you simply repeat the process later on? What does it mean to be 20 if you have the experience of an 80-year-old? And you've gone through life. Would you even want to go through life again? Is one of the central questions of the play. And if people have this kind of technology, what do they do with it? How quickly do they publicize it, or do they keep it secret? Because of course this the premise in this play is that it's been paid for by an extremely wealthy couple who really want to use it for themselves.
Right.
all of it sort of got started when I read a book by Ray Kurzweil called Singularity, in which he points out that, you know, scientists are looking just over the horizon. And within another 20, 25 years, you know, our advances in AI, robotics, nanotechnology are going to really change the landscape of human life. And so it's that's what the play is really rooted in.
Yeah, and those moral dilemmas and sort of ethical conundrums manifest themselves from the very first page of the script, because mm-hmm. Abby and Don, Abby was suffering from Alzheimer's, and mm-hmm. she wakes up and she really doesn't know where she is, and she goes, "What have we been? What's going on here?" And they said, "Well, you've been in this test, and we're very happy it succeeded because there was a 10,000-to-1 chance it probably wouldn't." And she goes, 10,000-to-1. I can't get it." She can't get across the fact that says, right. "You submitted me to this test where the chances of it succeeding was like really rare." And from there, we sort of learn about Abby and Don.
Yeah, her husband swears to her that she signed the contract on a good day, but I'm not sure it's enough for her.
Yeah. And this is how you begin to open up these stories. You start with two, and then pretty soon here comes another character who interjects herself into the scene. And she's got the one that we all think about, you know, do we want to relive the pain along with the joys of youth?
Yeah.
And from there, you see somebody who's out to make amends for what they did, they're not going to make the same mistakes they made the first time around. And you sort of go through all of these pretty much.
Yeah, you know, as we live our lives in the normal way, it's pretty easy for younger people to simply blinder themselves to what the struggles of old age might be. But now we're looking at 20-year-old people who are just old, who are just 85, you know, and had probably gone through 10, 20 years of not just diminished capacity, but real pain, illness, poverty, because all of these test subjects were chosen because they were basically thrown away or had nobody left, or those sorts of things. They had no money. They were indigent. And so they had lived tough, tough lives. And the question is, do they really want to go back? Do they want to go through that again, knowing what's likely to happen, you know, later in many people's lives? And if not everyone's, to some degree. And so anyway, it creates some actual dilemmas for them.
Now, as you were writing this, you know, you're an experienced guy. You're not 80, but you're moving to that period where you're looking back further than you may be looking ahead. You know, hopefully not. But
I'm more like 180. But go on.
So as you're writing this, I mean, are these things you're actually thinking about yourself as you're writing this? I would think this would really have you thinking about these sort of things that we normally try to put off thinking about.
Well, you have to put yourself emotionally into anything you're writing, any play. You know, the character dilemmas have to become yours on some level as you write, because you have to write out of yourself and the things that concern you, interest you, scare you. So sure, there's some of that without question. Different eras in different people's lives are some are sunnier and some are rainier, you know, and that's just the way it is. You know, one's always trying to find those sunny spots again, but you know, it builds character, I guess, to have to realize that you have to go through the rest of the stuff too.
Well, I think that's the beauty of the idea of this play, is that if you're asked to go back 50, 60 years, the initial reaction would always be, absolutely.
Yeah, right. I'm on board.
I'm on board. Then you start thinking about all the things that have happened in your life that may not happen the second time around, or may happen even worse the second time around. Then you get into the serious moral dilemmas of that. And that's a really interesting premise, I think.
Well, it's also a mirror image of the way we think when we're young about old age, which is like, it's, you know, it's not coming, it's not going to happen to me, it's going to be easier for me somehow. When we look back on this concept of, you know, returning to the age of 20, we automatically think, well, it'll be much better. Well, really? Why? You know, why is it going to be much better? Because I'll know so much more. Well, that may or may not be an advantage. You know, so it becomes morally complex very quickly.
My guest today is Lee Blessing, a playwright, numerous plays over the years. His latest play, The Hourglass Project, was the subject of a workshop at the beginning of this year, and now TU Theaters presenting the revised version of this piece again this weekend. It opened last weekend and will continue again this weekend through Sunday at Kendall Hall on the University of Tulsa campus. Mm-hmm. Besides moving that event that you talked about that was earlier, any other major changes, or was it just a matter of pacing, or do you feel like the pace was good the first time, or the way we introduce various characters? Because we start with two and then eventually more of them sort of interject themselves and we all learn all of their stories through the course of it.
Yeah, I think the biggest change came just before we did the reading in January, and that had to do with reworking the plot line, the major plot line of the play. But since then, it's been mostly taking characters that weren't sufficiently fleshed out and, giving us a handle on them, giving them stories, giving them fuller arcs. So that's really been the work, of the intervening months.
Tell us a little bit about one of the characters that you did flesh out, how they compare from first version to this version.
Oh, well, I mean, for example, the character of Carol, who is always, in a way, when you have these characters, you have to give each an assignment. One has to be, Walter has to be ambitious. He has to want, he wasn't a success in life. He wants to be a success.
Walter
in life,
was so a lawyer, but he was not really great success.
Yeah. So, I mean, we know where he's coming from, and Abby and Don have their marital problem that kind of identifies them. Melissa already wants to commit suicide again. She's decided she's not in favor of this at all.
Yeah, she actually joined the study because she thought it would kill her quicker.
Right. Carol was there, and she was she didn't have a defined history. She was just another older person who's now young, and so I made her a former nun. So we kind of look at her a new way, and she's asking herself questions about, I lived a very cloistered life. Maybe it should be a little different this time. So it's more that sort of thing.
And of course, the play opens with the fact that you have hormones again.
You
have a 20-year-old libido.
Yeah, a bunch of 20-year-olds running around on the island. They're challenged that way as well. Mm-hmm. No question.
You do all these revisions. What are you looking for when you finally see the piece put on the stage? How do you look at it as a playwright looking at the work after you've seen directors and actors interpreting these roles?
Well, the most fun I have with it, I think, is watching people who are 20 contemplate being 80. I was talking with Susan Barrett, the director, and she was telling me that she had them walk around with weights on their ankles and wrists for a couple of weeks. So they could get used to having some muscle memory of what it is to be older, and not be able to rely on your
body. I think that would be the most difficult thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because you just have no clue.
You have no clue. Why should they, So I think then watching them, the performances deepen in an interesting way when these kids, because kids that age think a lot about age. They think a lot about life. They think about the whole process. And for them to actually commit to being somebody who's already been there and already done all that and lived that long and felt all that, is a fascinating thing to watch in this play. To see, it's an interesting, unique challenge really for actors that age. It's sort of a relief from watching plays at the college level, the high school level, where actors are asked to play people much older than them, you have to kind of just suspend your disbelief as you watch that. Here you can watch people who are quite believably the age they are, and yet there's something going on psychologically and emotionally that's a lot deeper than that. Not that 20-year-old people aren't deep, don't get me wrong, but it's added on. It continues to complexify, shall we say.
My guest today is Lee Blessing. His play, The Hourglass Project, is presented by University of Tulsa Theater, which had a great workshop with the play at the beginning of the year. And when you see this play on a new group of actors, even in the workshop method, does it give you new ideas, or do you think it's given those actors that spent time with it during the workshop a better understanding of the play when they come back and do a production?
Well, I'm very impressed with these actors. A number of them did the reading last spring. Some of them who did the reading have graduated since, so they're not here. But others have replaced them, you know. And every actor, you know, brings their own energy and their own abilities and their own insights to every role. So, you know, that's what I'm always looking for is, like, what is this person doing for this role? And, you know, I know I won't see anyone else quite do it that way again, you know. And that we have people who have sort of wonderful, very individual characteristics about them as performers, you know. That's, you know, there's actors that I love to, I just love to see the way they move, because they move in such absolutely unique ways, you know, and you'll say, I'll never see that role with that kind of physicality again. It'll be different, you know, not bad, but different, you know, and there's always a joy when I go and see a new production of a play.
Now, do any of those characters sort of, even though they're young, they're still walking like they're old at the beginning, or do they all sort of inhabit this 20?
I think part of, you know, there's a line in the play where somebody says that it feels scary even to walk, you know, and this is a person now whose body works great, you know, but they had been conditioned for maybe 20 years to be cautious about how they walked and where they stepped and what they did, you know, and what the limits of their body were. So now this character, she can't quite trust that she can go up and down stairs easily and not lose her balance and all the rest of that, you know. So it's a very interesting and often very funny kind of set of observations they make.
And we should mention this play is very, very funny.
Yes, it does make people laugh.
And I assume that's the point of this piece. It is a comedy, but there's this serious idea of, if you had the opportunity, would you go back? What are the ethical concerns? What are the moral concerns of going back and living life again?
Yeah, in a way, the play starts with the existential concerns that they have about living again, and it graduates to the socio-political concerns about, if somebody has this technology, what are they doing with it, and what are they doing to keep it secret? The play works on a lot of different levels that way, and it uses humor, especially in the first half of the play, and in the second half it kind of moves to somewhat darker questions about power and money.
Yeah. Now, having workshopped it again, seeing a second production, is this play in its final version, do you think?
Who knows? You know,
how are you in general? Do you tend to tinker with plays a long time?
No, you know, I mean, this play, I feel like I'm getting pretty satisfied with, pretty happy with how it functions. The rule I have for plays that start in the professional theater, and again, this is a play that started in university theater, is that once they're published, I don't let myself work on them anymore. You know, I move on to the next play. With this play, I may still tinker, simply because, you know, being done in a number of universities, it probably, you know, is not going to lead to getting it published by a major leasing house like Samuel French or Dramatis Play Service. Because they, you know, they like to publish things that have been in New York recently and people have heard of in the professional theater. Whereas this one would have trouble being an eye character play of kind of getting that kind of.
I would think that the nonprofit theaters, nonprofit theaters, and community theaters and university theaters are probably doing as much or more than commercial theater, really.
Oh yeah. And you know, and this play was written expressly for university theater. You know, it is to be that opportunity to do a production with 9-20-year-old roles, and yet have it be a play that's actually about something significant, and where nobody's playing a cliched sort of role, and so it was built for a very specific purpose in that sense.
Yeah. So are you thinking about your next play at this point, now that you've seen this one through? It's about ready to be set aside, or you think there'll still be some tinkering going on?
Oh, I've written my next play a couple of times since I started on this. I have a play that Dramatis Play Service is going to be publishing in the next couple of months called For the Loyal, and that's a 5-character play. So... And that had its world premiere this year at the Illusion Theater in Minneapolis and did very well.
Mm-hmm. And this play, I assume you'll be getting more universities interested in this particular play?
Yeah, I've talked to people at a couple of universities over the last year, and I think one is set up to happen at University of Wisconsin-Green Bay and another one potentially at Fairleigh Dickinson University. So, you know, if I get enough of these up and done, other people in other programs around the country will start to be a little more conscious of the play, and I think it'll get more productions that way.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned you've already had another world premiere since then, so this is so. It sounds like you're a guy that juggles a couple of plays at a time, or are you pretty much a singular worker as far as what's working?
No, I tend to write about one thing at a time, but I write at an average of one new play a year, you know, mm-hmm. so that actually over time becomes a fairly prolific record, you know, and so, you know, I'm kind of pushing them along down the conveyor belt.
I would think the revising process is such, I mean, that's really where the play gets fleshed out, that mm-hmm. it's good to take a break between revisions, or are you a guy that really wants to work on one play until, you know, and revise and revise and revise and say it's there?
You know, it's interesting. For the Loyal is a play that started one way, and I wrote a complete draft of it, observing all of Aristotle's unities. You know, it's a completely naturalistic play. It worked in running time. It stayed in the same place. It had the same characters. The action was, you know, unified. And when I got all done, I said, well, this is nice, but it feels very old-fashioned since, after all, these were Aristotle's precepts. And that was a while ago. So I rewrote it fundamentally. And it feels realistic through 25 pages, and then it just sort of explodes and goes into the mind of one of the characters, and it becomes a psychological journey thereafter now, and works much better, you know. But in order to kind of keep working on that and keep revising it, I ended up having it read at five different places around the country for over the course of a year before we produced it in Minneapolis.
Do you learn something from every table reading, from every stage reading? Or?
Well, one thing you learn, I mean, these were readings in Philadelphia and Greenville, South Carolina, in Idaho, McCall, Idaho, Minneapolis, and Los Angeles. So one thing I realized was it works all over the country. You know, very, very different audiences, all related to the play. So, you know, that's one of the things you learn. But also I was working and revising mostly smaller things, but some significant things, you know, all through that process. Okay. And that's what really wakes you up to your own play, is having other people hear it in front of you. You know, that's when you can really do a revision. You know, you kind of realize what you have to do.
And you can see a result of the revision process at the beginning of this year here in Tulsa with the Hourglass Project, which will be presented by TU Theater again this weekend at Kendall Hall on the TU campus. Lee Blessing, thanks very much again for speaking with us.
Thank you, and thanks to the university for the opportunity to work on this play.
Playwright Lee Blessing speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. TU Theater presents a full production of the revised play in its second week, with performances tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday evening at 8, Sunday afternoon at 2 in Kendall Hall on the TU campus. For ticket information, call 918-631-2566. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.